Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. Been doing business a couple decades plus. We are always very active in the purchase and sale of all forms of rare coins and precious metals. We buy scrap gold, jewelry, and diamonds. We also specialize in investment portfolio building, helping you preserve your wealth in a conservative, long-term, biblical manner, which is much better than the long-term performance record of paper. Trust me, the bull market that we've seen for a year, you know, or I should say the surge, the Trump surge, has, you know, been bouncing off the ceiling for quite some time. Those of you who have money in it, in your 401ks and IRAs, you know what I mean. You saw this wonderful gain, and now you're just kind of floundering up and down, up and down, up and down. And down is probably going to come soon. We live in a crazy, hate-filled, at least for the political aspects of this nation. We've got a lot of hate. Watching this stuff today, you know, I mean, I don't know how much you guys know, but I don't mean to think you're ignorant, but just Robert Mueller's the guy that headed up the special investigation on the Russian collusion, which was just a bunch of baloney malarkey. Donald Trump has loved America. His family says he loves America. He never thought of it. You know, they actually, the Russians tried to get a hold of him, and he had the foresight and brains to avoid him. And he knew what he was doing. He's smart, and they could not get him on anything at all. So Mueller, you know, puts out this report where he doesn't exonerate him, of course, because Mueller fills his entire staff with far left-wing donors, you know, like Hillary Clinton donors, big, you know, just really unbalanced, super unbiased, or I'm sorry, super biased people. And you know, they indict people. They just did a lot of things that they were just trying to give the illusion continuously that they were right on Trump's tail and they were going to get him and put him away. And every time something had happened, you'd get the left, you know, saying, yeah, this is proof. This is it right here. We got it. It's coming. They're going to get him. And they never did. Well, why is that? Maybe because he's innocent. There has never been in the history of this nation anything like this ever done to a president before. The left-wing party is now extremely socialistic. We've got income taxes destroying our world. I mean, you may or may not understand that, but you have to understand the income tax is the foundation for socialism. And I mean direct income tax. Well, income tax, I guess the word speaks for itself. But I mean, I can tell you straight up, it will never happen. But it's imperative that we get rid of the income tax. It is a purely Marxist development that is literally destroying the world economy. The income tax has become such a tyranny that our liberty, freedom of movement, world, and world economic growth are all at great risk. And never before in history of human civilization have we ever found, do we find an income tax, okay? It's true that Ben Franklin once said that the two certainties in life were death and taxes, but it's equally true that taxes in general have been around since the beginning of civilization. And we know that the earliest recorded taxes were implemented in Mesopotamia over 4,500 years ago. That's a while. where people paid taxes throughout the year in the form of livestock, which was the preferred currency at the time. The ancient world also had inheritance taxes, also known as estate taxes or death taxes. The earliest recorded evidence of a death tax came from ancient Egypt in 700 BC, where they charged a 10% tax on property transferred from at the time of death. The most serious crisis we face is that with the dawn of Marxism, which is communism, socialism, and you know that's going on hard and fast right now, folks. It's a cycle. It's been, you know, 3-4 generations ago, they knew communism was bad. They watched the whole world fall apart because of it. You know, World War II veterans went to war because of it. Uncountable, unfathomable lives were lost over it. People know what it's all about. The old folks will say, the older generation, they knew, they understood. And then generation by generation goes by and people think, free stuff's neat. This is the new millennial generation. And they don't even realize that they're that way. They won't listen. Trust me, I've had the conversations. And it's just where they're at. You know, but like I said, the most serious crisis that we face with the dawn of Marxism, and then I say communism and socialism, they're all the same, right? The way we pay taxes has changed significantly. Yet one, you know, for the record, took place in 2006 when China eliminated what was the oldest existing tax in history. The agricultural tax was created 2,600 years ago and was eliminated in 2006. To help improve the well-being of rural farmers in China. Well, guess what happened? They absolutely started to explode in agricultural creation, agricultural whatever, you know, the creation of it, I guess. The word won't come to me, but production, there you go. Taxation in the U.S. can be traced to the colonists when they were heavily taxed by Great Britain on many things from tea to newspapers. We know about the Tea Party, that thing. Legal and business documents were required to display a stamp tax. Most colonists objected to this form of taxation since they had no political input about the creation of new taxes. It's called taxation without representation, which was where? In the, Declaration of Independence, where they said, hey, you know, this isn't fair. We've got a bunch of we've got some, you know, politicians in Great Britain slamming us with taxes on something we have no say in. We're back there now. We elect these people for office. The power of D.C. is so far beyond anything we ever could fathom. We have no control. You elect people because they tell you what you want to hear. If you're a lefty, they tell you you get a ton of free stuff. If you're a righty, they tell you they're gonna stand against the government just giving away free stuff. And then once they get in office, what do? They do whatever they want to do. They all unite. They sell out. They live the great life. They live the powerful life. They fly where they want to fly. They go where they want to go. They live the good life at our expense, and they don't accomplish anything because the system is a great big logger's head and you cannot get through it. And it's not a very good situation. So the colonists objected to the to taxation since they had no political input about the creation of any taxes, which gave the rise, like I said, to taxation without representation. After the American Revolution, the new government of the U.S. passed the Stamp Act of July 6, 1797, which levied taxes on wills, personal estates, the infamous death tax. So the transfer of possessions of the deceased. The death tax only lasted 5 years and was abolished in 1802. The first issue of U.S. tax stamps occurred in July 1 of 1798 under the name of the state incorporated in the design. This... and had the name of the state incorporated in the design, which was Pennsylvania. which and this issue lasted until February 8th of 1801. So it didn't even make it 3 years. The highest denomination was $10. The second issue was authorized in the Act of April 23rd, 1801, and it lasted from 1801, March of 1801 to June of 1802. It just kept getting shot down. It also carried denominations up to $10. The third federal issue was imposed by the Act of August 2nd, 1813, and it was killed in January of 1814, etc. So by the American Civil War, embossed tax stamps were replaced by printed tax stamps. Because of the demands upon the government to fund the Civil War, Congress passed the Revenue Act of 1862, which put taxes on boxes or packages of matches, perfumery, playing cards, documents, and then medicines. There was also an issue of paper printed by private firms under the supervision of the government with a tax stamp in place on the checks, for example, which lasted from 1862 to 1883. Now, what's the relevance of all this? I mean, I can keep going. The relevance is that these were taxes based on consumption and purchase. So they would tax an item, not a person. Our founders were very, very clear that the taxation of your ability to create an income or earn an income was a God-given right, an inalienable right, not taxable, right? It would be like taxing you for your freedom of speech. You know, even taxes on guns and, you know, there's all we can get into that. It is a problem. It's all a communist type situation. The government allowed the manufacturers to create their own stamps on their own expense, and the government allowed the various companies to add 5 to 10% premiums on their products if they covered the cost of manufacturing the tax stamps and so on. This private tax stamp system was issued, you know, through 1883, da-da-da-da-da. You know, I'm sitting here scanning through all this information. The first income tax was created in 1861 during the Civil War as a mechanism to finance the war effort under, guess who, Mr. Abraham Lincoln. In addition, Congress passed the Internal Revenue Act in 1862, which created the Bureau of Internal Revenue. This kind of sounds like what we know is coming, right? An eventual predecessor to the IRS, obviously. The Bureau of Internal Revenue placed excise taxes on everything from tobacco to jewelry. However, the income tax did not last and was not renewed in 1872, so it lasted 11 years. And in the case Springer versus United States, 102 U.S., you know, 586, I'm sure you care, of 1881, the Supreme Court upheld the income tax, which was quite interesting because we had just finished the Civil War, we had huge war debt, and there was a lot of fear, there was a lot of need for money, they were trying to round it up. It was a temporary thing, and it started to take root, and it's the nature of tyranny. As governments grow and people grow in power, what do they want? Money. You can look at the Prime Minister of Malaysia who, you know, finally got taken down. You know, he was absconding billions and billions of dollars. You know, power buys money. Money buys power. But absolute power gets a lot of money, right? So we had, the court in 1872, Justice Swain wrote the opinion of the court. The central and controlling question in the case was whether the tax which was levied on the income gains and profits was constitutional since it forbid any direct taxation. This is where we started to lose our marbles. The Supreme Court at the time was loaded with liberal, with this is when socialism was just really getting taken root. And it was, you know, hardcore philosophical discussion. People were reading and learning, and and being taught this garbage, and it sounded good, and it just it they didn't realize in application the long-term effect of it. What happens is when you force people to give you their money, they fight back. Okay. At that time, they still had the strength to fight back. We no longer do. I mean, we couldn't stand against the government. It wouldn't matter if every man, woman, and child in America took up arms. Now, realistically, if that happened, you know, we'd have, you know, a period of tyranny, and then we would have some kind of concession. But the left just wants more and more and more, and then they tell you that anybody who's gained wealth in America is just a rotten, filthy person. I've talked to left-wing friends that are convinced that the government has to do this because people won't do good acts, which is totally wrong, you know. As a Christian biblical nation, we did good acts. I mean, we, you know, there was never the homeless problem. Do you realize what the homeless problem is in this country now? It's all over the place. I mean, that's, they said that Seattle was spending something like $12 billion a year on, you know, however many homeless people. It figured out to be $100,000 a year per homeless person. I mean, give me a break. This is where we're at now. This is what happens, and it's just it's wrong. It's saying, oh, you know, the individual won't exercise acts of compassion, so the government has to do it for them. That's the logic, and it's not consistent with history. That, you know, people don't need, you know, other than if someone's handicapped or, you know, truly, you know, down on their luck, churches would take care of them and help them get on their feet, get a job. There's no guarantee of wealth. I mean, look at America. Look at the wealth that we've generated over the years, you know, and now we've got to the point where 47% of people are on welfare. I mean, give me a break. So Justice Swain, in the rule of 1872, you know, he contemplated the fact that the Constitution forbid direct taxation. The court played games with the words to uphold the government. It wrote, "Our conclusions are that direct taxes within the meaning of the Constitution are only, they call them capitation taxes as expressed in that instrument, and taxes on real estate, and that the tax on which a plaintiff in error complains is within the category of an excise or duty." A capitation tax is an assessment levied by the government upon a person at a fixed rate regardless of the property, business, or other circumstances. The reasoning used was clearly overruled later, which necessitated amending the Constitution in 1913 with the 16th Amendment, which made income tax okie-dokie. And, not a good situation, that, you know. So there's, I got a lot more information here. We could go, you know, on, I've got so much of it is, you know, I don't know how deep I want to get into this. But, you know, the Revenue Act of 1862 created a federal estate and gift tax system following the end of the Civil War. Those taxes were rolled back, but the War Revenue Act of 1898, that's when we started to get some major, we had a major depression in 1895, which was concocted by the broke stock companies and a lot of the trade without any special excise tax. And so the taxes were rolled back, but the War Revenue Act of 1898 created another death tax to raise revenue for the Spanish-American War, which is, you know, it's always war and patriotism. That's what it used to be. They used to play on people's heartstrings and patriotism and get them to, you know, want to support their country and whatnot. And that, my friends, is no longer sticking. The new generation's smarter than that, but they think the government just has endless funds and therefore can continue to just produce, you know, unreasonable levels of taxes without any you know, any limit or income, I'm sorry. So in 1894, the statute was ruled unconstitutional in the case Pollock versus the Farmers Loan and Trust Company. And Chief Justice Fuller wrote for the court whether the void provisions as to rents and income from real estate invalidated the whole act. Two, whether as to the income and as to the income from the personal property as such, the act is unconstitutional as laying direct taxes. And then he said any part of the tax, if not considered as a direct tax, is valid for want or uniformity and so on. So it was nullified. And the origination of the current income tax on individuals is generally cited as the passage of the 16th Amendment by Congress on July 2nd of 1909 and ratified February 3rd, 1913. And it was on June 16th, 1909, President William Howard Taft, in an address to the 61st Congress, proposed, you know, get this, a 2% federal income tax on corporations only by the way of an excise tax. So think about this. They always start with this minimal emergency stuff. So it's 2% only on corporations and only on excise. So the income taxes, so you have to be a corporation, you have to produce a product, and you're only paying 2% of what you are shipping outside of the country. Okay? That's how they suck you in with this stuff. That's how they play the game. It's like you're like, well, that's minimalistic and we can live with 2% and it's only on stuff being shipped overseas, not sold locally, etc., right? You know, that's how it always starts. You should see the growth in the tax rate from that point forward. Holy moly. So, you know, so Congress proposes this 2% tax by the way of an excise tax. And then this, all of a sudden, this Marxist concept of direct taxation gets created. People start to swallow it. Then the government must know everything we do. If you think about it, in order to tax you, all of a sudden, they have a right, they have access to everything you do. That's what it's all about. They track us for it, you know, it assumes we all cheat. They come from the assumption that we all cheat and lie, and in the process, it's hunting money globally to the point that the world economic growth has been declining. It was Obama who pushed what was called FATCA, F-A-T-C-A, the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, where they were, you know, people that had like gold, confidential gold accounts in Switzerland and things like that. They were trying to demand that they give up people's names for these anonymous safe deposit boxes, and in some cases they did. It was terrible. I had clients that actually had money there in Zurich and where else, you know, overseas, and all of a sudden Obama starts putting all this pressure on these countries saying, you know, you have to give up this confidential information to sovereign nations with threats behind it. I mean, you start thinking about that, you know, that's exactly the problem with this Marxist system is it's all consuming. It's all knowing. It's all destroying, really. That's really what they're doing is a theft of freedom. Income tax, direct taxation is a theft of freedom. Consumption tax, indirect tax, doesn't breach your freedom. So think about it. If they want to collect a certain amount of tax, they need a certain amount of tax, obviously, to run the government. Why not tax items that you consume? If they tax items that are consumed, they don't have to go through all your personal effects. At that point, corporations are liable to show, but they have a different set of books, you know. They have to take in a product and put out a product, and it leaves a little more of the pressure on them. And especially on excise taxes, all they have to do is track, you know, what's going in and out because they're using shipping and whatnot. It's definitely, there's a better system. This system that we're under is strictly Marxist, and I've discussed John Maynard Keynes, who created the system that we currently use. He had some quotes, a lot of quotes about what he was building. I'll pull one up here, one of my favorites on, let's see if I can find it. I love how Google's buried a lot of this stuff. And then they argue that it was Lenin that said it, and, you know. But he basically says, by a continuing process of inflation, the government can confiscate secretly and unobserved an important part of the wealth of their citizens. Well, we right now, folks, are in a hyper-inflationary state, okay? I just sold some property on Lake Coeur d'Alene, and, you know, for a fair amount of money. And since I sold that, just in the 8 months or whatever it's been, the prices are going through the mountain out there. Just, they're going just crazy. And everybody's like, where's this money coming from? It's coming from hyperinflation. People own little businesses, they're not seeing it. They're not seeing the income growth. You look at Walmart and all these companies, they're doing well, but they're not seeing huge growth. The money's going into real estate. And why, I don't know. People feel that it's safe or safer, maybe. That seems to be the big hype. But the bottom line is the fiat currency created by John Maynard Keynes he said communism is about the money, and his system was the necessary ingredient for Marxism to prevail. When the final result is expected to be a compromise, it is often prudent to start from an extreme position. And he basically, that's in his writings, by this means, you know, they can secretly confiscate and unobserved confiscate. By this means, the government may secretly and unobserved confiscate the wealth of the people, and not one man in a million, he says, will detect the theft. I cannot leave this subject as though it's just treatment wholly dependent either on our own pledges or economic facts. The policy of reducing Germany to servitude for a generation, of degrading the lives of millions of human beings, and of depriving a whole nation of happiness should be abhorrent and detestable, even if it were possible, even if it enriched ourselves, even if it did not sow the decay of the whole civilized life of Europe. And then he goes on and you know, he talks about in the great events of man's history and the unwinding of the complex fates of nations, justice is not so simple. And if it were, nations are not authorized by religion or natural morals to visit on the children, their enemies, the misdoings of parents and rulers. And then another quote of his is, the best way to destroy, this is the full quote, the best way to destroy the capitalist system, okay, so that was his desire. He was a socialist. The best way to destroy the capitalist system is to debauch the currency. That's where this, by a continuing process of inflation, governments can confiscate secretly and unobserved an important part of the wealth of their citizens. And he says, by this method, they not only confiscate, but they confiscate arbitrarily. And while the process impoverishes many, it actually enriches some, which is what is designed to happen. You hear the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and the middle class disappears. That is what we are experiencing right now. Does Trump know it? No. Trump is not an economist. Trump is a businessman. His attitude is, you know, build, grow, build, grow, build, grow. He has always borrowed money, but everything that Trump has always done has been income producing. So in his mind, he can't comprehend when money just gets spent and there is no compensation to return the debt. That is where we have such a problem. There's all these quotes, you know, whatever. I won't get into all of them, but he hates capitalism, bottom line. And that's and this is coming back. We've seen this cycle over and over and over again, and this is where we're at right now. We're sitting in a position where our income taxes are taken over. We talked about, you know, Obama did the FATCA, F-A-T-C-A, compliant, you know, foreign accountant tax, where he basically made every country in the world give in. He said that it required all foreign entities to report on anything they do with Americans outside the USA or elsewhere, or else their assets would be confiscated in the U.S., okay? So any bank that had foreign that was foreign based, if they had banks in the U.S. and the UBS bank was the big classic, he said if they didn't follow our rules by giving up all the information, all this private confidential information, that they would have all their assets seized in the U.S. I mean, this guy was crazy. And this legislation was passed into law in 2010 when what we had Congress and Senate controlled by the left-wing Marxist socialist liberals, and they passed it into law as part of the unrelated jobs legislation known as the Hire Law. So FATCA is a broad, complex set of rules designed to increase tax compliance by Americans with financial assets held outside the U.S. Consequently, no Americans can have a bank account outside the USA, for banks will no longer accept the risk that an American failed to pay their taxes. So, and I know of people who will get foreign citizenship to do this stuff. It's a lot of work. It's not something I, you know, have ever, you know, whatever, would be interested in. But it just basically, folks, it's just globalizing the monetary system at a deeper level. There's nowhere to hide, okay? There's nowhere to hide your money. There's nowhere to protect yourself. And it says, you know, so you can't – no American can have a bank account outside the USA, for banks will no longer – they won't accept the risk that you'll fail to pay your taxes. Prior to FATCA, growth rates were generally greater than 6% and 7%. Annually, and since then, the highest growth rate was 5.4% in 2018 under Trump. You remove that, as soon as Obama put that in, I mean, growth rates were barely 1%. So, you know, every country now is hunting taxes and destroying, world economic growth. The tax dispute, UBS Bank is now with France. Is in now with France, will occupy them for years to come. At the end of the February of 2019, a Paris-based criminal court ordered UBS to pay a fine of 5 billion Swiss francs in damages because the bank helped wealthy French between 04 and 12 to hide their money from tax authorities. So UBS has moved on. It'll take years to reach a financial decision, you know. The entire Swiss secrecy policy was installed because of Hitler, who made it a crime to have money outside of Germany. Hitler did not invade Switzerland, nor did he have his fake court impose huge fines on Swiss banks. Today, governments no longer respect international law. The point is, even Hitler respected international law. So, you know, I don't know. We kind of touched on that. I can keep going, but it's a lot, and I know that a lot of it is a little bit deep, and you know, the bottom line is the entire direct taxation is specifically what our founding fathers in the U.S. forbid. Put that in your mind. We are living in an unconstitutional taxation system. It's in a primary way why they broke away from England. And we're now witnessing the destruction of the world economy, and everyone's being hunted globally. The Common Reporting Standard, CRS, is an information standard for the automatic exchange of tax and financial information on a global level. It was put together by the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development in 2014, of course, pre-Trump. And its purpose was to hunt down tax evasion, primarily in the European Union. People were going there. And they took the concept from, you know, the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act of Obama, which imposed liabilities on foreign institutions if they didn't report. In other words, it's being picked up nationally or internationally. And I can go on all the details. It's a little bit complex. And it goes on. There's so many. I got a list of nations here that are all part of it. And the bottom line is you cannot have your money overseas. And one reason I went to this, I've had this is the new thing. If you listen to this Stansberry research, they did this great big thing lately where they, you know, they ramped up these ads and they said on May 15th, we're going to have this huge conference call and you got to sign up ahead of time. And, you know, here's how to protect your money with the next great big stock market crash. And they, you know, they said, put, you know, a substantial portion of your money overseas. And then, of course, they said, you know, another portion of it in precious metals based assets. Well, you know, I like precious metals just because they're real money. I mean, they're up and down and they stay a little flat. And that's just the era we're in. But when we're talking about hyperinflation, I mean, man, I'm telling you, there's a lot of it. And the big money is going into real estate and things like that. And it will be, I assure you, the next big plop. Okay. Nation building, you know, real estate, you've had huge economic or real estate crashes in London. You know, we've had economic and real estate bubbles. I've got all these facts. It's just too much to get into right now. But now you've got all this stuff of the debt that's involved with real estate. So nobody ever really owns it. Real estate and taxes are always combined. So you never own it, you know. I've got I've got stuff on Australia, New Zealand, London, Dublin, Austria, Germany. They're all set up now where they're just taxing the tar out of your real estate. Which is a hard asset. It's a biblical asset. You know, the things that are truly attributed as biblical assets is gold and silver, livestock, real estate, and human life. As I've said in the past, that's what the Bible says lasts. That's what's always lasted. The problem is socialism goes and it takes a chunk of that. So here's the deal. When you own precious metals, what we sell you is anonymous, it's transportable, it's immediately liquid at anywhere at any time, okay? We've talked about that. You've got it made. It's pure, it's simple, you don't have to be an expert. I've had people that are like, you know, Kevin, I want to take you to lunch and dinner and spend 6 hours and come into your conference room and discuss gold and silver. There's nothing to discuss. It is money. It always has been money. God said it was money. It starts in Genesis chapter 2. It is absolutely unconditionally what he used as monetary wealth throughout the entire Bible, from old to new. Every nation has always honored it. It's been the pinnacle form of wealth in every single society. It's private. It's immediately liquid. It's immediately recognized. It's fungible anywhere at any time. It's just what you want to have your money in. Now, we are in a hyperinflationary phase. Okay, and here's your thought process. Well, you know, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait and see. How long does this last? Some of you are listening going, yeah, well, you know, it kind of makes sense. But, you know, a lot of you aren't numbers people, you know, and you don't realize that when Bush had $3.8 trillion deficit and we're now 20, what, $3 trillion? I mean, come on. All that through the Obama stroke. We got that. We've got unfunded liabilities. We've got programs. We've got politicians that just promise free money to everybody. Folks, simplistically put, I promise you, it cannot mathematically last. When every man, woman, and child in America owes over $1 million apiece, no way it's going to last. And then Obama racked it up hard. And where did he send the money? Overseas. There's conspiracy upon conspiracy upon conspiracy where, you know, true stories where he transferred massive quantities of weapons to ISIS, to Muslim, you know, fighters, to Hamas, Hezbollah. He, you know, on and on it goes. He got huge contributions from them. I mean, he built up the Muslim nation, tore down Hosni Mubarak and raised up Morsi, who crucified, you know, five Christians in front of a million Muslims in front of his parliament building or whatever it is, presidential quarters, you know, in Egypt. We tore down Gaddafi, you know, who we always knew was kind of nuts, but we had treaties and accords with him where he helped us out. Didn't matter. We went in and killed him. I mean, had him brutally murdered. And he was waiting for us to rescue him because he had an agreement with us. We didn't keep our word. The CIA gets involved. They don't keep their word. During Benghazi, there were 60 CIA agents a few blocks away. They didn't come to the rescue of Christopher Anderson or those at the embassy. Why? Because they were conducting illegal covert operations, dirty stuff, moving weapons to hardcore Muslims, creating, you know, giving, can you imagine giving Iran $150 billion up front because so that they would, you know, promise to reduce their nuclear or eliminate their nuclear weapons program, and now they say no way because of Trump. Well, of course. He gives them the money up front. There's no incentive. Why did he really do that? Now, Iran is the greatest central post for every form of radical Muslim terrorist in existence. And he funded them at a level that is beyond comprehension by our own standards. $150 billion to them is something like $3 trillion to us or more. I don't know. Based on their GDP, I don't remember the numbers, but it's pretty crazy. And so there we are. So here we are in a onslaught of, you know, the rapid growth of socialism in America, which, by the way, now 59% of people say they want American socialism. It's they're begging for it. They want it, and so we're gonna get it. And we've got, you know, the Democrats are back in the House. We're gonna be a socialist country. I can't tell you when, but I'm telling you, your money and taxes and, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the Green New Deal and, you know, get rid of all the cars and everybody has to ride trains. And it's just interesting. If you look at America's future under socialism, that's not America. It isn't pretty, you know. And that's the Democrats' new fixation. Because that's their believers' fixation. The socialist idea, taking the Democrats' new fixation with socialist ideas seriously and coinciding with the 200th anniversary of Karl Marx's birth, the President's Council of Economic Advisors decided to apply conventional economic analysis to the U.S. economy under socialism. and, you know, basically just showed the absolute and total and complete destruction. This was, you know, October, I think. Let's see here. October of 18, we had all these left-wing, we've got all these left-wing political candidates, Democrats, hurting for a moment, but we've got, you know, the Democratic Party today is super enamored with socialism. I mean, they're just overridden with it. A poll earlier this year by the American, that was last year, Action Forum, said that 40% of Democrats said that socialism is the best form of government. Another 10% said that socialism and capitalism are best, so a combination. And 57% of Democrats said that socialism would have a positive impact on our society. Now, that was last year. Now we're at 59% Democrats. So this next election is going to be full-blown socialism against capitalism. That's why they have to vilify Trump. Trump is the epitome of capitalism. You look at Venezuela. I mean, folks, countries that just, they go bankrupt. They have hyperinflation. They confiscate, you know, assets. There's no other way. That's just what happens. You end up in the extreme, you know, with Cuba and, you know, and then they argue that socialism hasn't been implemented properly, like we would implement it properly. You know, the healthcare nightmares, and I don't even want to get into it all, but I think you get my point. So we'll just leave it at that. Socialism is knocking on your back door. They will confiscate your wealth, and the day will come. They're brainwashing our students. The media's all in. I mean, you've got freedom of the press. The press was supposed to be an objective resource of information where they report, you decide. There's always been bias in the press because we're humans. We're biased. The problem is that the bias is now becoming the norm. In other words, these extremely left-wing anchors on TV and media hosts consider themselves midstream or midline, and you can forget about it. They're not liberals, okay? Thomas Jefferson was a liberal. They're illiberal. They're the illiberal left, okay? They're not liberal. They're not tolerant. Socialism isn't tolerant. Study the history of it. It's terrible. I mean, it absolutely boils down to violence. Now, what happens to the world if America adopts socialism? I mean, there's people that say America is not in the end times prophecy. There's the story, I think it's in Daniel, where the eagle is twice saves or twice on the back of the lion. The lion is Great Britain, and then you've got the third time it's pulled off or whatever, and then the lion dies. Or it's been a while since I studied that, but it kind of shows that Great Britain, you know, we've saved them a number of times, and once we're gone, they collapse and the world changes. I mean, Great Britain may not be the most powerful economic force or military force in the world, but they're a very, very powerful, morality force, I guess you would call it. Anyway, let me see if I can find this real quick. Let's see what verses those are. Let's see. I'm trying to do a quick check here. Let's see. We'll read Daniel 7. in the first year of Belshazzar, and if this isn't the right stuff, so what, we're reading scripture, right? Of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and vision in his mind as he lay on his bed. Then he wrote the dream down and related the following summary. Daniel said, I was looking on my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and four great beasts were coming up from the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. I kept looking until its wings were plucked. And it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind was given it. Behold, another beast, a second one, then it goes resembling the bear. Okay, so check this out. Who's the lion? Great Britain. Who's the eagle? America. So the first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. And we've saved Great Britain in World War One and World War Two. Okay? He said, I kept looking until the wings were plucked. Okay, so no longer did they have the protection of America. And then what happens? It was lifted up from the ground, made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and what? A human mind also was given to it. Okay, so here's what happens. You've got our system, which is designed by God, for God. It's a Christian system, okay? Great Britain, once we're removed, we can no longer protect them, and then they're forced into socialism, and then the world goes on. And then the second beast, resembling a bear, which is often associated with Russia, was raised up on one side, and blah, blah, blah. Three ribs were in its mouth and its teeth, and thus they said to it, arise, devour the meat, much meat. And then it kept looking, and behold, another one like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. Many say the leopard is, Islam. The leopard doesn't change its spots. We're getting a huge Islamic influence globally. And then it says, after this, I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrifying, extremely strong. It had large iron teeth. It devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and it was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. While I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, a little one, came up, and then we get into the great beast and the Ancient of Days, and all of a sudden, we know where the world's going, don't we? I mean, we know that ultimately we're going to be in a one-world government. We know we're going that way. And folks, the distractions of the media and the press, it's not just a distraction, okay? It is, but at the same time, it's conditioning the world. The world watches American news, okay? So you got to be prepared. And financially, I'm telling you, in Revelation where it tells us that if you don't take the mark of the beast, you are not going to be able to buy and sell. And the word for buy and sell is really talking about the trading in the marketplace. And that's exactly what it means. And so what it means is, it doesn't mean you're not going to be able to buy and sell. It just simply means that you're not going to be able to participate in the marketplace, okay? And so what you need to do is be prepared with precious metals, which has always been there. We've talked, God's very clear on the day of his wrath, people are casting their gold and silver in the streets. Folks, that tells you it lasts till the very end. When you have your money in paper and the world and you're betting on man, when you have stock, you're betting on man's ability to create wealth. And we now, it's not like this great economy. What's driving the economy, if they stopped creating money today, fiat currency, we would crumble, crash, fall at a rate you wouldn't believe. It'd be overnight. Done. Done, done, done. And that is where we're at. So, how long do you go? How long do you push? I say you get secure a portion of your wealth in gold and silver. It really makes sense. Everybody's like, I want this kind of return, and you need that because of inflation, but you can't get it. You can't get it. You can look at these indexes, the Dow and the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. They're all artificial. They remove and replace stocks. They've got weighted moving averages. The consumer price index, which supposedly tells you what inflation is artificial. It doesn't include food, transportation, real estate, or energy costs. You're being lied to. The system's huge. It's controlled by the central banks, people that really research it. You know, they call them the banksters. I know people that are phenomenal experts at it, and they hate it, and they know how bad it is, and they know that the banks control the world. They do, and they're fine. You can say whatever you want about the Federal Reserve until you make any effort to remove them. And guess what? Do some research on JFK. JFK was a, quote, Democrat, but he was one of the last great conservatives we ever had in this nation. He had executive orders prepared and ready to go to remove the Fed. He was starting to create legal tender notes. He was going to take us back. We were economically capable at that time of bailing out. This country, we've had so many situations under Clinton. During the dot-com craze, we had the wealth to pay off the Fed, to pay off the debt, and go back to a gold standard. JFK wanted to do that. He was assassinated. That is why he was assassinated. I don't care what conspiracy theories you've heard, whatever, but that's it. It's very simple. I don't have time to cover it today. It'd be a great show. I'll try to put something together for it. I've done it in the past, but it's there. I've got old transcripts I never go to, which I should. But I'm just telling you, bottom line, that's where it's at. And it's simple. You know, he causes all, it says here, we're about out of time, the small and the great and the rich and the poor and the free men and the slaves to be given a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. And he provides that no one will be able to buy or sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. Okay, so 666, that's the number, man. We all know that, right? So that's it. And the bottom line, when it says, you know, he can't buy or sell, when you go into, the Greek, agorazo, is to buy, and it just means participate in the marketplace, to be in the marketplace, to attend it, to do business. And it's the internet. And so the word sell is basically the same, poleo, and I'm out of time, but it means to participate in the marketplace, the internet. Okay? So long story short, get your tail straightened out, get your finance straightened out, get into precious metals. I always scramble at the end. Give us a Google review, free silver dollar, 3 reviews, 2 silver dollars. But you have to call us after you do it. Don't email. You have to call. Take care. God bless. See you soon. Bye-bye.